From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on December 30th, 1995. That day marked the last time the Buffalo Bills won a playoff game. They defeated the Miami Dolphins, and then the next week, the Pittsburgh Steelers crushed the Bills and sent them home. The Bills played a few more playoff games over the next several seasons, culminating in a gut-punching loss at Tennessee, the so-called Music City Miracle, almost 18 years ago to the date. And so it's been a bit of a wild and manic week in Western New York, with the Bills finally breaking back into the NFL playoffs. And they will play at Jacksonville on Sunday. This hour, we'll have some fun with Bills mania, but we're also going to address some serious questions. First of all, if you would not allow your children to play football in school, is it hypocritical to watch and root for the Bills or watch the NFL at all? Is there any dissonance there? Second, NFL ratings are down roughly 10% this year. Why do we think that is? There's a lot to talk about. The business of the sport and what's going on this weekend with our guests in studio. Scott Pitoniak is back. He's a longtime Rochester sports columnist and author. 22 books he's written, five of them about the Buffalo Bills. And Buffalo Bills, the good, the bad, and the ugly. He says, the most honest and candid. Fair enough?
That's fair.
You have new chapters to add, though. This is exciting.
Yes, yes. This is, this is unbelievable. And it really... You know, Evan, I really have gotten the same vibe that I got many years ago when they were making the Super Bowl run. I had an opportunity to cover this team when they were rock bottom, and then all the way through that rise to the Super Bowl, and then of course I've covered the last 17 years as well of the drought and stuff. But I'm getting that same vibe, when you go to the grocery store, when you're going to fill up your gas tank and stuff. People are excited this week, and it's been kind of cool to kind of relive those feelings again.
I'm not going to say you're right about everything, but you never believed that the Rex Ryan era would produce the next playoff team, and sure enough, the Rex Ryan era ends and here we are.
Yeah. Well, I like this new coach. He is the anti-Rex Ryan. He came in and he had a vision. He made these guys accountable. What I really, really liked about Sean McDermott was the new Bills coach is that he came in and he did this thing that I've never seen coaches do before. And he had during camp, they started doing this bonding thing where, they'd have a different player get up in front of the rest of the team and just talk about who he was, who influenced him, the circumstances he came from. And I really think that enabled guys to get to know one another a little bit better. And I'd never heard a coach do that before. And I just thought it was brilliant. It was a brilliant bonding thing that he did. So I like what I've seen so far from Sean McDermott. And yeah, he is the antithesis of Rex Ryan, that's for sure.
Also with us in studio is Jerry Doobie, who is a longtime Bills fan, long-suffering fan.
Well, yeah, I guess so. Not quite the 17 years. We only moved to this area in 2008. And in that year, I think they had a great start to the season, and I was pretty
excited.
Well,
they've done that a lot.
Yeah. and I had these painters at my house who hated the Bills and stuff, and I was like, they're great. I love them. They're like, watch out. And I'm like, no, what do you mean? I've learned to understand what they mean.
They're so good right up until Halloween. But here we are now, Jerry. It's great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us is Brian Parker, who is an NFL tight end and is a McQuaid graduate, I think. Is that right?
That's right, yep, 2010.
And it is awesome to have you here, by the way, because I didn't know you were a Rochesterian. So where is your latest NFL address right now?
So I actually just got back from Denver 2 days ago. I was on the Broncos practice squad the second half of the year. I was with the Jets through the off season last year, and I was injured in camp, and finished with the Broncos and signed a futures contract to go back there in April and begin the next year on the 90-man roster.
That's great. That is wonderful. Congratulations on that. You already have some NFL stats to your resume, and the goal is just to keep working hard and to break onto the roster and get more time on the field?
Yeah, staying healthy is number one. The pieces will fall how they will. Other than that, I'll work hard. I'll be in the meeting rooms and train, but number one thing for me.
You are
is
so
healthy.
Well trained as an athlete. You're saying all those wonderful cliches.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
One day at a time, all that stuff. Did you grow up a Bills fan?
Huge Bills fan. Yeah, definitely. I was 7 years old in '99 the last time they made it. So I don't remember that as clear as I remember the next 18 years
yeah,
or so.
18 years.
But yes.
And Brian, once you become an NFL player, Can you say, you have to kind of set your own fandom aside. Obviously, you're playing for a team no matter where you are, and you're working hard to kind of break through wherever you can do that. Is it strange, though, to be, you know, to be moving into a division rivals, perhaps? I mean, if the Miami Dolphins called tomorrow and said, you know, you're going to start for us next year, or obviously you can't now, you're under contract, but is that strange growing up a Bills fan and then potentially going up?
Yeah, at first, a lot of things going into the NFL were strange, that being one of them. Rooting for the Bills my whole life, and then being on a part of another organization that competes against them and is trying to, you know, attain the same goal they're trying to get. But I still rooted for them. I still still watched. I have a Bills app on my phone, so I'm still paying attention to them. Now, if we were going to play against them or if it came down to us winning or them winning, obviously it comes to my job, my career comes first. But, yeah, there's nothing wrong with me still cheering for them in the back of my head at home.
And you're rooting for them on Sunday?
Well, of course.
You got it. Well, it's great to have Brian Parker, an NFL tight end, here. And on the line with us is Dr. Michael Maloney, a sports medicine orthopedic surgeon at UR Medicine, who I think knows Brian decently well. How you doing, doctor?
Oh, I'm doing great, Evan. Thanks very much. Sure do.
And I wanted to bring you in because one of the things we want to talk about this hour as we talk about Bills Mania is, you know, all of the factors that go into sort of the current NFL landscape and sports fan watching experience. And some of that includes the discomfort some fans have the more they learn about CTE and related issues. So put both your sports fan hat on and your doctor hat on. How do you view those two issues together?
Oh boy, I think the first thing that's probably important is that we're recognizing that CTE is more and more prevalent, and I think the sooner we acknowledge and understand, you know, what leads to it, we can kind of work towards hoping to minimize or prevent it to the best of our abilities. You know, obviously football has kind of evolved over the last couple of decades. Guys are bigger, faster, and stronger, and you don't have to be a physics major to know that, you know, force is mass times acceleration. So these guys are hitting each other pretty hard, and injuries are going to occur. And from a medical standpoint, it's our job to try to protect them from injury, and when they get hurt, make sure we properly diagnose them and get them back on the field when it's safe and ready for them to play.
We'll have plenty of time to talk Bills if you want this hour, listeners, but I want to start with a question for all of our panelists, and it starts with this as a fan. If you go back to this past Sunday, if you're a Bills fan, you're going to remember where you were for a long time, because those are awesome moments when you've got that, you know, that moment where you think all is lost and all of a sudden everything flips. It was an amazing moment when Andy Dalton's Cincinnati Bengals on 4th and 12 somehow delivered not only a first down to keep them in the game, but what became the game-winning touchdown and put the Bills in the playoffs. We've probably all seen the videos from the Bills locker room to bars across Buffalo, New York City. It was awesome. I was with a very good friend, Mr. Adam Chodak, who is a longtime Bills fan. Adam and Jill might be a bigger fan than Adam. And it was just bedlam. It was such a great moment. I grew up in Cleveland, a Cleveland Browns fan. When the Browns left, I became a Bills fan. I've got family in Jamestown, Chautauqua, Buffalo. They're going crazy. So that is an awesome moment. And when that moment sort of started to subside, I started thinking about something. I thought, you know, I've got a son who's almost 6, and I don't think I'd let him play football. And I don't want to be Pollyanna. I mean, I understand there's risk in soccer. There's risk everything. There's risk driving in a car. There's risk crossing the street. But I just feel like right now, that's how I feel the more I learn about CTE. And then I remember talking to Adam and Jill going, well, if that's how I feel now, should I be watching the NFL? Is there something inconsistent with that? I'm going to start with Brian Parker on this one here, because you play in the NFL. You grew up a fan. How much do you think about CTE and your own health and your own future now?
I can't think about it, because the more I think about it, the less I want to be a part of it. So that's something that right now, you know, I've played football for almost 20 years, and they say, you know, a lot of the CTE damage is done when your brain's developing and you're growing and all the constant pounding. It's scary to think about. It's scary. I've had one football-related concussion this past mini camp, and it was about a 3-week injury, and it was a bad injury. About 3 weeks, I couldn't look at my phone, watch TV. Driving was difficult. That's scary. And if I had another concussion, it would be something I really have to think about. Do I want to keep playing the sport where, you know, you're taking all these poundings? I actually spoke with a doctor who's a he's a specialist in concussions with the Jets when I was with the Jets, and he's a neuropsychology, is what his title is. And he actually had an interesting piece on it, because ever since the movie came out with Will Smith in it a couple of years ago, CTE has been really blown up. You know, should people be playing football? Or should our kids be playing football? And he had an interesting point on it because his thought are a lot of the studies done on people who have CTE, and you know, you can only do it through an autopsy, right? So all these people are dead that they're doing these tests on.
Yep.
And most of the people have volunteered to give their brain for testing, and a lot of these people played in the 70s and 80s. And in the 70s and 80s, people are doing drugs, they're drinking, a lot different than it is now. So a lot of these brains were affected by more than just football. And now Aaron Hernandez obviously had some serious CTE, and he was a young guy playing in today's era. So it's scary to think about. You really got to look at all sides to it. And for me, being so far in, it's at this point, I mean, it's scary to say this, but the damage is probably done for me. I probably have it, don't have it. I really hope I don't have it, only having one concussion. But thinking about having kids in the future, and if my kids will play football, I can't hold them back from playing football. But I probably wouldn't have them start when I started. I started in fourth grade. I don't think there's any point to that. I think, you know, you need to have a healthier upbringing, maybe play another sport where you're not knocking heads potentially for the next 20 years like me. But it's scary, but I like to think more positive since I'm actually involved in it.
Well, Jerry Doobie, is a Bills fan and also a parent, do you, if you were, knowing what we know now, if you had, you know, if you can kind of go back in time and you knew what, now what, you know, you knew then, what you know now, would it change your mindset? I mean, would you be a parent or a friend of friends with kids who says, kids shouldn't be playing? Or do you think, no, I mean, there's risk in everything that we do?
I think if the kid was passionate about it, I would say do it. I wouldn't encourage them if they weren't really passionate about it. But an interesting thing, my dad has dementia now, and he has issues with his temper and stuff like that. And it doesn't seem to be the same as Alzheimer's and all. And he used to play high school football with the leather helmets and stuff. And so I don't know if it's CTE or whatever, but, you know, so I feel like my family was affected a little bit by football at that point, too.
Yeah, but you're not drawing a line in the sand saying no, never.
No, I wouldn't. Yeah.
Okay. See, right now as a parent of an almost six-year-old, I sort of feel like I am, and I have to admit, I'm going to watch the Bills on Sunday, and I think I'm a little bit of a hypocrite. I think I am. I honestly do.
Well, I feel that way about eating meat sometimes, too. You know, I get it from the grocery store, and I'm very, you know, detached from the butchering that goes on and all, but I eat it. And so it's kind of, you know, I just put the risk out of my mind, although there is great reward that goes along with the risk, too. So, I mean, at least at the professional level. Hmm.
Scott Petoniak, do you see any dissonance there, and do you draw any lines in the sand on playing football?
It's a great question, and I'm very conflicted about this. Obviously, I've made much of my living covering professional football, and I must admit, I enjoy the games. But I've noticed, like, you know, through the years, I've changed the way I cover the games. I can remember in the 1980s, I can remember writing a column about Shane Conlon, and I built a whole column around this incredible hit he made that turned this game around, you know, and I remember how much we celebrated the big hits. There were DVDs that were put out by the NFL, Crunch
NFL's
Time.
Biggest hits, Crunch
Time.
Yeah,
their biggest hits, and they kept, like, there was one, two, three. I mean, they just, you know, kept, you know, pumping those out. We had, you know, SportsCenter, ESPN, devoted entire segments to, you know, the big hits, and wow, look at that. So I you know, and I cringe sometimes. I've had an opportunity. I think it, you know, I've interviewed some wives of NFL players who have, you know, later were diagnosed after their death with CTE. One woman in particular, Sylvia Mackey, who was the wife of John Mackey, who was regarded as the greatest tight end of all time. Like, there's an award named after him in college football for the top tight end. He played at Syracuse University. He was a brilliant guy. He became the president of the Players Union, very successful businessman, very, very well-spoken. And, you know, to see his demise, you know, his cognitive ability going as well, like, he wound up giving away his business, essentially, with his wife not knowing this, and this was over time. So, you know, those types of stories moved me and made me wonder and question, you know, should I be following this? And I must say, I played high school football. We didn't know anything about CTE, obviously, or concussions really weren't taken seriously. I did allow my son to play. And it's interesting, Brian mentions about, like, you know, if you could do it over again, maybe you don't play when you're 4 years old.
But or in fourth grade.
Yeah, or fourth grade or whatever. Where my son didn't play Pop Warner football, and I wasn't pushing him towards football, but then it was peers. You know, I want to play. He wound up playing at Athena, but he didn't play until the modified level. But I don't, you know, and I look at it now, and you wonder, like, you know, should I, you know, would I allow him now? Or could I stop him even? I don't know, you know, with that peer pressure. I don't know. It's a difficult question. And again, I do feel a little hypocritical because I do still enjoy covering it. And I do see, from having played a million years ago and also having covered all these very accomplished football players, I do see a lot of benefits to the game. And, you know, there's a lot that comes out of it. But again, it's this risk-reward thing, and it's really, really difficult to see the demise of a lot of these guys from having played the game. And some of them are relatively young. We talk about Dave Duerson committing suicide, shooting himself in the heart and leaving the note because he didn't want to shoot himself in the head so they could donate his brain for, you know, for research. Mm.
Dr. Maloney, should kids be playing?
Wow, that's a great question. You're kind of putting me on the spot. You know, as Scott mentioned and Brian mentioned, football is an amazing game, and it teaches incredible lessons that I think, you know, pertain to your life. And you learn things that I think other sports, frankly, don't teach you. There is the risk. We learn more and more about head injuries and other injuries. I mean, it's not just head injuries that can affect young athletes. I mean, whether it's a knee or a shoulder, some of these injuries can affect, you know, the rest of their lives, the things that they may or may not be able to participate in, what type of job they decide to pursue. So I think there is the risk reward. The medical community is working hard to try to understand, define the risks, and understand is there a better time, is there better technique, are there better equipments. You know, they've got helmets now that have these accelerometers in them that can gauge how much trauma, how much force each impact is delivering to these athletes. So, look, I don't want to be the hypocrite either. I've had two boys. I've allowed them both to play. I coached them through the Vince Lombardi leagues, and they both played here in high school. And I think that they've benefited from playing. And fortunately, you know, a couple of broken collarbones and some other things, but no concussions as yet. I think I have a different decision to make if one of my sons sustains a concussion. I know from my own gene pool, neither one of them are going to be a Brian Parker. They're not going to get the opportunity to play professionally and make a living, which is a pretty special and unique thing. So I think if that day comes, we have to have a conversation about the value, because we do know that repeated concussions are a concern, and that the brain doesn't like to be hit and then hit again, and that there's almost a magnified impact, if you will, on the level of injury to the brain when it takes a second hit. So, you know, you have to understand what's happening and again, you know, be thoughtful about it. And as a parent, be the advocate for your kids. And
Doc, just real briefly here for people who, I mean, I know we keep hearing a lot about CTE, but what is the short definition for what CTE is?
Well, it's chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And so it just basically means that there's been a degeneration, if you will, of the brain tissue. And you know, the brain has all these neurologic pathways and the synapses and, if you will, the circuitry and the trauma that's occurred. And then the reactive changes at the cellular level in the brain slow those synapses, slow the communication, if you will, from cell to cell. And that's what leads to dementia and alterations in people's ability to, you know, make good decisions, or, you know, depending on where in the brain seems to be most affected, can affect people differently. But in a nutshell, that's what's happening, is that you're seeing trauma in the brain. And as the brain tries to heal itself, that tissue may not be normal brain tissue. You've got scar tissue in there, and it slows the circuitry and the communication of the cells in the brain.
CT emails the program and says, Evan, I grew up a Packers fan. I've got three college degrees, one each from the University of Minnesota, University of Wisconsin, and the University of Michigan, and I used to love watching football. But due to all the brain injuries, I have stopped watching any football games. That's from CT. I want to appeal to our listeners. Call the program and let us know. Are you watching on Sunday? And do you feel, do any of you feel like I do, which is I'm watching on Sunday. I was going crazy last Sunday when the Bills pulled this off. I was with a lot of the people in this world who were going nuts for Bills fans. That was me too. But I do feel a little hypocritical knowing that I don't think I'd let my son play. I remember I played up until ninth grade. I played quarterback. And I quit not because I was getting hit, but because I didn't like 34 dive. I didn't like handing off all the time. I later realized the reason we handed off all the time was because I was the quarterback. But regardless, I'm sort of thankful for that now, that I wasn't good enough to throw the ball, because standing in the pocket is a scary thing, and you think about your kids doing it. How do you feel, listeners? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're lucky to have an NFL tight end here, Brian Parker, who is a McQuaid graduate, a Rochesterian, grew up a Buffalo Bills fan, and now with the Denver Broncos. And Brian, how do you feel about the efforts that the league has made to make it safer for players? I think about this past weekend. I watched Kiko Alonso put a couple of hits on that looked pretty dirty to me, I will say. And I know that as fast as it's moving out there, sometimes it's hard not to be helmet to helmet. But I'm somebody who says, if I'm going to watch, I want the protections. I know some people that go, oh, we protect quarterbacks too much. I want those protections. You're a player. How do you feel about them?
Yeah, so each year, I finished my third year last year. In camp and in the preseason, they bring in NFLPA guys in the union, show us new videos to introduce new helmet technology, new rules they're putting in to protect the players. And it's changing every year, and I know it's been changing before I was in the league, and I know it's going to keep changing. A lot of those hits that people are fined for, probably half of them are intentional, half of them are unintentional, just because everyone's playing so fast and it's so physical. I don't think that the fines stop it, but it brings more of an awareness to it. You know, if someone goes helmet to helmet with someone intentionally, do they deserve to lose 2 weeks of paychecks? Maybe. Did they mean to do it? Maybe they did. I think the NFL has really taken a stance to minimize as much as they can. And each year, new helmets are being put into each team. Our team, I know, with the Jets in the offseason, they brought in, I think, a dozen new helmets. And they look like robot helmets almost. They don't look like NFL helmets, just to try out. So I know each year they're trying new things. And equipment is such a big part of the NFL. It's no one really knows about, but there's so many people that work with the equipment staff and so many new technologies and new things are developing each year to try and, prevent the concussions as much as possible. But yeah. That being said, you know, it's going to happen no matter what. There's no perfect way of avoiding it and preventing it. And the game's so fast and so physical, it's just tough to completely avoid it.
What's the biggest hit you remember taking?
Biggest hit I remember taking, I was a sophomore at McQuaid.
This was in high school. Wow, you're an NFL player and you go back to high school.
Biggest hit, I was a sophomore. We were playing East High School, and a senior ran across the middle, and I was running across the middle, and I had a ball thrown to me, and I was hit right in the chest. It wasn't the head. And I had the wind knocked out of me for about 5 minutes, and that was the worst one. The concussion I had, I kind of got nicked on the side of the head, just in the wrong spot. It wasn't that big of a hit, and a lot of these concussions are just, you're getting hit in the head, you're not paying attention, your head goes one way.
But it's not necessarily one of those highlight reels.
It's not always a highlight reel. The highlight reels where you're getting hit in the head are usually the ones that people are being fined for. So, my biggest hit was over 10 years ago and when I was, 50 pounds less.
How did you feel the next morning?
I was a little delirious for about 24 hours.
I'm not laughing. I hope I'm laughing with you. And I shouldn't be laughing at all. These are serious questions.
Yeah.
I admire you, and we're all rooting for Brian Parker, tight end for the Denver Broncos, who's in studio with us, a Rochester native. Scott Pitoniak is a longtime Rochester sports columnist and author. Jerry Doobie, a longtime Bills fan who's celebrating seeing them in the playoffs for the first time since she's been a Bills fan. And Dr. Michael Maloney on the phone with us. We're going to get some of your phone calls in here because what we're going to talk about for the rest of the hour are, the ratings decline. The NFL ratings are down about 10% this year. I think part of it is what we've been talking about. It's a complex mix of things for sure. And we'll talk a little Bills and have a little fun with it as well here. So we'll start with Bob in Rochester, who's been waiting. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi, Evan. Thank you very much. I think this is an incredibly important topic, and I'm glad you're doing this. Mm-hmm. I feel a little bit like you about being ambivalent and a little bit of a hypocrite. I watch less and less these last couple of years, but I still do watch at times. My main points are that I think the science is becoming incredibly more clear, and the march of science is inexorable. And it is showing, in fact, there's a lot of misdirection about concussions as the only factor, where there are studies now being done by the people who are running these special places in Boston and other places, where they're showing that it's the ongoing series of hits, and that people who have had very few or even no concussions have sustained repetitive hits, and that is a factor as well, and they have been showing up with CTE. And then recently a study was published that dealt with living players, where they did in-depth interviews with them and their families, and they broke them into two categories: people who started before the age of 12 and after the age of 12. And they were able to show that those who started before the age of 12 were like four times more likely to have impulse control issues, anger issues, lack of empathy issues, quite a number of things. And these were in living ex-players now. So I think, unfortunately, that in a time in the future, they'll look back and this will be seen like boxing. Hmm. Today, you don't see boxing much at all anymore.
And well, they still box, like but...
Well, it's not like when we watched, Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier and all of those folks. I mean, boxing has receded.
Yeah, Bob, first of all, thank you for the phone call. Scott Pitoniak, briefly, do you agree with him that boxing is not the marquee sport that it used to be, and is it because of some of this?
I think it's part of that. I think it's also, you don't have a Muhammad Ali, you don't have certain figures, but I think it is part of it. When we talk about concussions, think about the whole purpose of boxing is to concuss somebody, right? Is to knock them out. But I think looking at this from a perspective of popularity, there was a time in this country when boxing was the most popular sport in this country. And it's nowhere near that now. And so that's one of the things that I'm concerned about with the NFL. You look at some of these trends right now, I'm wondering about the long-term effects. Yeah. If more and more parents are saying, no, our kids are not going to play this sport, you're going to, your talent pool is going to shrink. And we're talking about being conflicted ourselves. Like, man, I love this game, but maybe I shouldn't love this game or whatever. I think you're going to have more and more people, thinking that way.
Yeah, Dr. Maloney, what do you think about the march of science that Bob was talking about there?
Oh, but I know Bob's voice, and I know him well. He's a smart guy, and obviously he's keeping tabs on this. And I think he's right. I mean, it's kind of what I was alluding to before, that it's not always the concussion, it's the second hit. And I think to his point is that there are plenty of athletes who maybe have never been formally diagnosed with a concussion, but just the repetitive nature of the impacts over time caused trauma to the brain. The brain doesn't tolerate that very well. And so, I think, again, it's incumbent on the medical community to continue to, work as hard as we can to understand what's happening. And obviously, if we determine that, there's definitive evidence that this is something that a certain age should not be doing, then I think we have to kind of get to those, local communities and societies and national organizations and let them know and let the public know. And I think he's right. I think we will continue to learn more and more about this condition and hopefully be able to create an environment as safe for our young athletes as possible.
We're going to get back to your phone calls in just a second. We got to get our only break of the hour. When we come back, we'll talk more about this. I know our listeners want to talk about a lot of different things related to the Bills being back in the playoffs. They play Sunday afternoon at Jacksonville. I tend to think the league ratings are down for a number of reasons. I think this is part of it. I think we need, frankly, it's just the level of plays. We need better quarterbacks to get the ball to people like Brian Parker. We need better people in the pocket. There's a bit of a talent dearth right now. I think the games are slow. I think if we need 15 minutes to tell you that Kelvin Benjamin didn't catch that ball in the end zone, then there's something broken with that stuff. And I think it's even harder to be there in person. But there's a lot, and I know you're going to weigh in as well. So let's get our only break of the hour and come right back here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, if you had to pick one song to capture the national mood of the Obama era, what would it be? And if you had to pick one song to capture the mood of the Trump era so far, what would it be? Well, The New Yorker has a breakdown of what they call the dissonance, the difference in music of the eras. They say pop music, music of all kinds, reflects the current mood. Are they right? What are the songs that do that? We'll take a look next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. A lot of different ways to take this conversation. Jim in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Jim.
Yes, I have a little different perspective. First of all, I want to take my hats off to three owners who really made the NFL what it is today, and they've all passed away. That's the late Ralph Wilson, who was just down the road from us here on I-90, Buffalo. Wellington Murrah, he recently passed away, the owner of the New York Giants. And Art Modell, who was the owner of the Cleveland Browns, but he moved to Baltimore and became the Ravens. And the reason I said that, each of those gentlemen had a philosophy and had a plan of action. And let me give you an example. Art Modell was the marketing guy. He came out of New York City advertising. So he was the guy who basically got the big contract for the television stations. Ralph Wilson was a strong proponent of small market teams. The Green Bay Packers, that's a small market. The Buffalo Bills, that's a small market. Minneapolis St. Paul, that's a small market. And Wellington Mara said, we need to have revenue sharing. The revenues from the television stations are prorated to each unit, each team on a standard basis. So that's what made the NFL what it is today. And technically, the Bills are the only New York State team. The New York Jets and the
yes,
New York
they're
Giants,
in New Jersey. That's
they
right.
They play in Jersey.
That's right.
And that sales tax revenue flows to the state of New Jersey. Doesn't go to New York City. But that's another story because he tried to get them to build a stadium. But anyway. But
that's true.
And the safety issue, obviously, the a lot of research is being put together. In fact, it was a piece on your sister television station, XXI, where some of the biometrics are being studied in terms of sensors and helmets to look at the impact, how they can lessen that impact. So a lot of research is being put into this sport. And this sport reminds me, I don't know if most of any of your audience have been to Italy or not, I'm quite sure they have. They go to the Roman Colosseum, and this is just like it was 1,000 years ago, okay?
Jim.
It was the public was gravitating for that. That's why the Bills have been a very successful team, even though it's a small market. Let me give you an example. The New Orleans Saints used to bring their football team up here to play the Bills, and they would make more money bringing that team to Buffalo than they did in New Orleans. Now, you figure that out.
Jim, thanks for the phone call. A lot to work with there, and let's kind of work backwards. First of all, I've heard this comparison, that this is the modern gladiatorial sport. And the one place that that's not true is, you know, I don't see any, you know, large animals eating people on the field. Not that I mean, like, maybe in the halftime shows at the Super Bowl, but I don't otherwise see that. And then here's Mary Beth sending us a note saying, I've never liked football, and I hated every game my son played in high school. I always said you have one brain. I'm grateful he doesn't play in college. But that said, NFL players now know what they are signing on for, so I see nothing hypocritical about watching. That's from Mary Beth. So, you know, I take Jim's point that, you know, there's always historical analogs. I don't necessarily know it's Roman Coliseum stuff, but I think some people are starting to feel that way. So maybe, I mean, Jerry, what do you make of that? Is that too strong a comparison for you?
Yeah, I don't think they die directly, although it does ruin lives. It kills careers.
Well, and it
lives.
Can shorten lives. We know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
it's not as gory. I mean.
Yeah. And then he's looking at the history of, you know, he's pointing to the Wellington Maras and the others who kind of built up the game, Scott Pitoniak. So let's ask our guests what we think is hurting the ratings. Ratings down about 10%. I'll read you a stat, and then you guys can take it from here. First of all, a study conducted by Rasmussen Reports shows that approximately out of 1,000 American adults participating in a telephone questionnaire, scientific study, nearly one-third, 32%, said they are less likely to watch an NFL game due to players taking a stand and protesting during the national anthem. the Rasmussen said protesting the national anthem. And why do we keep mistaking? Nobody's protesting the national anthem. But anyway, the protest, the taking a knee protest. 32% of Americans in their survey said that they're less likely to watch. 13% of Americans said they're more likely to watch. 52% said not related at all. So that's one data point, Scott. But 10% ratings decline is serious. And I don't think you can point to any one thing, do you?
No, I think there's a number of things, Evan, that's going on here. I think there's we've reached the saturation point. I think there's too much football. In fact, even some of the major advertisers are talking to, you know, NFL officials about, we don't want Thursday night football anymore. Which, again, if we want to talk about player safety, I have a big issue about playing games on Thursday after you've played on a Sunday. And Brian certainly could speak to this. I mean, you can't recover in that short period of time. And we wonder why the games aren't that good. So I think there's too much football out there. I think really it's time to cut back. And this will happen if the advertisers speak. If they don't, you know, they don't want Thursday night anymore or too much out there. I think we've talked about the CTE issue. I think that is impacting, and some people have backed away saying they're not going to watch this game anymore. I think there's some cord cutting going on, and it's not only the millennials that don't want to pay these, you know, exorbitant prices for cable packages and
absolutely.
So forth. So I think there's that. And I also think it's interesting. I spoke at a class at Syracuse University not that long ago, an honors class in sports management. And it was interesting. I'm going around, and a lot of the students were saying, like, they don't want to sit around and watch a game anymore. They'll go on a mobile device and go and want to, you know, they'll watch the highlight shows and stuff. And this has been a problem in college campuses, like even at the University of Michigan with this enormous football stadium, they can't get students to come a lot of times. I mean, even with big games and stuff like that. So I think people's viewing habits are changing a little bit as well. So I think there's a lot of things at work here. And you alluded to something earlier, Evan, that I totally agree with, like, you know, as far as like instant replay. I mean, if it takes 5 minutes for them to decide whether or not Kelvin Benjamin has made a catch or not, I think this is really impacting. I'm at the point now, look, I'm all for trying to get things right with instant replay, but I think we've gotten to a point now where I just want to get rid of instant replay and go back to human error and just live with that. Because you go to a game now, in-stadium experience is terrible because the
slow.
Flow is interrupted constantly.
Yeah,
it's really bad.
It's slow. Jerry, Benjamin made that catch, didn't he?
Oh, my God. after that, I was like, I can't take this anymore. It was so upsetting. It was like, how could they have done that? I hate the Patriots. You know, it's horrible.
It's just science that the Patriots have an advantage. Although, you should read... ESPN, the magazine's report on the Patriots today behind the scenes. Bills fans, you're going to have Schadenfreude served at you in waves if you want to read that story. But as a fan experience, does that bother you? Is the game slow? Is it harder to watch?
I guess, like, I can go to the bathroom, I can go fix dinner, whatever, and stuff like that. I love being able to veg out on Sundays, and if it takes a little longer, then, you know, but I do it from home, and I'm lazy, I guess.
Brian, why are ratings down for your league 10%?
I think Scott hit it right on the head. I think there's a lot of factors for it, and I think a big one is, you know, this new generation of millennials, which I fall into that category too, but I'm still stuck in vegging out on Sundays, and as long as I'm not playing on Sundays, I'll be sitting there watching football all day. But I think a lot of kids these days, you know, aren't growing up like I was. They have phones in front of them. They could do whatever they want. They could watch three games at once on their phone. Part of it's definitely CTE, and part of it could be people who feel the way they do about the protests or whatever you want to call them that are going on. But I think it's just a lot of it is the way people change and technology changes. And part of it, sure, yeah, it has to do with the game of football, and people aren't agreeing with everything that's going on. But I think a big part of it is just how kids and teenagers can't sit down and do one thing for a few hours at a time. They need to be, you know, have their hands in their pockets, playing with their phone or computer, doing all three things at once.
Dr. Maloney, what do you think?
Well, I think they've all made really good points that there probably is a saturation effect. And I think that, you know, if you look at younger athletes, I don't think the participation in football is as much as it was 10 and 20 years ago. So if they're not participating as much, maybe they aren't following it. There's more
sports and activities that, that people can be involved with. So I do think it's a multifactorial effect as to why things are down. And obviously it's still going to be very popular with a large group of our American population. So I don't really think it's going to go anywhere anytime soon, but you may just see a little dip in the short term.
All right, so the phones are lit here. Let's grab some calls here. This is Ken calling. Go ahead, Ken.
Good afternoon, guys. I am one of the Exited fans. Over the years, I've watched documentaries, movies, seen the science and the brutality and what happens to these guys after year of getting the head smashed where their brain begins to look like Swiss cheese. And that kind of disgusts me right off the bat. But then the politics being brought into it, the grandstanding, the time, the length of time. I've had friends that still go to games and they're sitting around for 15 minutes just waiting for commercials to pass. The money, the obscene money that the players, by and large, are making, and then they feel the need to get out here and make a political statement. I'm tired of it all. And you're right. I got a device in my hand that if I want to see how the Bills are doing, I do a couple of buttons, and, oh, they're ahead by 7. Great. And then I move along. I'll let you guys discuss. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, I appreciate it, Ken. And what we'll do is let's take a couple of calls, and then we'll let our panel jump in, because several people like Ken want to tell us why they're watching or not. Monica is one of them. Go ahead, Monica.
Hi, Evan. I've grown up, I'm in my 50s now, and I grew up in a family, multi-generational, major Eagles fans. The first thing I saved for as a child was my own season's pass that I held on to until I went to college and then passed it on to my brother. So really diehard Eagles fans. But this past year, I made the decision to boycott, and it was very hard, especially since the Eagles are doing so well. But what was driving it, the first thing that really started to open up my eyes and be more critical of the game was that a dear friend of mine lost her son to suicide. Mm. He was the football player from the University of Penn in 2010, Owen Thomas. And they've studied his brain and definitely linked it to CTE. And that started to really open up my eyes. My friend would testify in Congress, the mother of Owen. And so I learned a lot. But what pushed me over the edge this past year was my support of Colin Kaepernick and my frustration with the managers and the owners in not standing up and supporting his right to free speech, basically. And it's just hard to watch the game knowing that so many of the players are people of color and that there wasn't a very strong initial support for the message she was trying to get out.
Mm. Thank you, Monica. And right along those lines with Monica's phone call, Jeffrey tells us, I used to be a huge football fan, but I did not watch it all this year due to the perceived collusion against Colin Kaepernick. I did not want to be part of a demographic thinking that he's, quote, bad for brand while the league lets domestic abusers play. So it's complex what's causing all of this. Let's grab one more. George in Rochester wants to weigh in as well. Go ahead, George.
Yes, and also those people hit the nail on the head, the last couple callers in that, Jeffrey, as well. But the most important part that people still are not identifying, I'm George Radney from Challenger Community News, largest weekly African-American newspaper. I used to sit next to Scott Petoniak in the press box for many years in the old press box. Yeah. But now in the new press box, we're kind of separated a little bit. Hello, Scott and everybody. But the biggest reason, they have alienated their fans on the simple basis, you can't even buy a ticket for a game anymore, because in 2011 at the Super Bowl, I was there when they voted during the week, and the owners voted at the owners' meeting, and they announced it during the press conference that the commissioner gives every Friday for the state of the league. They decided to allow the StubHubs and all the second retailers buy up all the tickets starting in 2012, and that's what has happened. When you watch a game during the season, you'll see so many empty seats in a lot of these stadiums, and you're like, wow, where are the people? How come people are? They're not protesting. They can't buy the ticket because the second resale, the StubHubs, they buy the tickets from the from the football team and then resell them at ridiculously high prices. The prices for this game in Jacksonville, the reseller got ridiculous rates. When I was in Atlanta covering the Bills, Atlanta back on October 1st, a $50 ticket was going for $270 at the stadium. And people were crazy, saying, I'm not going online and buying this ticket. I'll just watch it at the bar or at the hotel. The Bills fans stood in line and bought the 500 standing room only tickets that the Atlanta Falcons sold on Friday. They got up at 2 in the morning, stood in line, and most of the people they showed on the news that morning were Buffalo Bills fans. They bought those 500 standing room only tickets, but they preferred, they would have bought a good seat if the Falcons would have sold it, but they had already sold it to StubHub, and StubHub had jacked the prices up so high. That's the real reason why they're losing their fan base, because they're now allowing their fans to take their kids to the games anymore because they don't have access to the tickets at a reasonable price. Hmm. Have a good day, y'all.
George, thanks for the phone call. So, all right, so but we got one more call on CTE coming in. We'll get to that in just a second. But those are from Ken, from Monica, from George, a lot of different viewpoints there. Jerry, what do you make of some of that? Some of that resonate with you at all? I mean, you're still watching. You're excited for Sunday.
I know. And I have to say the political thing really bothers me because I really miss listening to the Star Spangled Banner. I really used to like that, especially like in the primetime games. They had great singers and performers do that. I keep wanting to watch, so no, it really didn't resonate. I mean, my heart went out to Monica and her friend, and I was glad that doing it in support of Colin Kaepernick. Mm-hmm. The other side, I doesn't make me happy. I guess I understand why people are doing that, and I understand why people wouldn't buy tickets. I never buy tickets. I don't think the stadium experience is that worth it.
Well, Scott Pitoni, look at L.A. I mean, the NFL should be embarrassed putting two teams in L.A. this year and putting one of those teams playing in a Major League Soccer stadium and can't even sell tickets, let alone playing the Rams games where half the seats were empty.
Yeah, and you had a situation in San Diego, a very loyal fan base, and it became another one of these stadium issues where these teams would hold communities hostage to try to get a new stadium built and so forth. So there's a lot of greed going on. And an earlier caller had talked about ownership and mentioned about, Modell would probably be a bad guy to bring up to a Cleveland Browns fan.
It's all right, I'm over it now. Enough time's passed.
But it was true about Ralph Wilson wanting to keep... I know for a fact there were several times he could have moved to a more lucrative deal and would have been justified at the time. I mean, I covered this team in 85 when they had 20,000 season ticket holders. And Wellington Mara, the caller made a great point about Wellington Mara. If he doesn't buy in as the owner of the team in the largest market in America, the New York Football Giants, this doesn't happen. And teams like Buffalo and Green Bay probably aren't part of this anymore.
Well, you know why I'm over Art Modell leaving? The Browns are having a parade today. Perfect season, my friend. Perfect season. We have to be quick, and I know Mike's got to quit. Mike, you got to keep it tight with a question for the doctor. Go ahead, Mike.
Quick question. I realize that they've done CTE scans on deceased football players and everything, but being a researcher my whole life, have there been any control studies done on CTE? What I mean by control studies is like normal activities that kids go through, kids playing on playgrounds and falling down and banging their heads and stuff. Have there been any control studies? I think you understand my question.
You're asking if there have been studies of the general population.
Yes.
In a similar way to football players.
Right.
I'm not a neurologist. I don't know specifically if that study has been done. I'm sure that people have looked at a population of patients who were not professional athletes or professional football players, but I don't know what the information shows. I mean, there's certainly going to be some element of normal degeneration, wear and tear, like we see everywhere in the body. But I don't to answer your question specifically, I don't know what the incidence of CTE is in the general non-professional football population.
All right, so let's have a little fun to finish. Brian Parker, NFL tight end for the Denver Broncos, longtime Bills fan. They win on Sunday if what, Brian?
Ooh, they win on Sunday if they don't turn the ball over. And they forced Jacksonville to turn the ball over back.
And the Jacksonville defense is going to make that difficult, but Blake Bortles might help on the other side.
Yeah,
never know.
I think the Bills defense could really take this game into their hands, and hopefully going forward, if they make it, Shady gets healthy and can contribute to their offense because he's obviously their main guy on offense. But I think they have a chance this weekend.
Scott Pitoniak.
I think if they run and stop the run. The old Marv Levy bromide there. Run and stop
the run. Which is old school for this league.
It is old school, but these are two old school approaches here. These are two teams with, they like to play solid defense and they like to run the football, especially Jacksonville. So it's going to be a tough assignment, and I'm real concerned right now about LeSean McCoy. He's practicing today like individual drills, but Really concerned about that ankle. I mean, here's a guy who really needs his ankles because he does cut on a dime.
And by the way, Brian, guys like you, guys like Shady, they want to be out there no matter what.
Yeah.
But how limited might he be? I mean, they're not going to tell you going in.
Yeah. I mean, ankles are tough. Sprained ankles are tough because they linger and they don't go away until you take the proper time off. Sometimes they heal up quickly. Sometimes they don't. Probably some of my worst injuries have been high ankle sprains that take 8 weeks to fully heal. So it'll be interesting to see what he could do and how productive he could be being out there.
Wait, are you looking for him to make cuts early on? Is it kind of a is he a decoy or is he actually being featured?
I'm thinking for the Bills to win, they're going to have to rely on other players, not Shady McCoy this weekend.
Okay. Jerry, what do you want this weekend? You want a victory, but what are your expectations?
Well, if I wear the exact same clothes wore last weekend when we won.
You control the universe.
And the football gods are with us.
If that stuff were true and you could prove it, I would jump through a burning table. And I would join all the crazy Bills fans. No, you know what? I wouldn't do that. I would send a check to Andy Dalton's foundation, which was a cool story this week.
Yes.
That was a neat little story. Bills fans really stepping up, and there's a lot of great stories this week. Kyle Williams getting into the playoffs and hopefully continuing this run. The team back in there. Dr. Maloney, what are you excited for on Sunday?
Oh, I just love the games. And as being someone who grew up in Rhode Island, I don't think really Sunday's going to matter too much because they're both going to lose to the Patriots.
pick up ESPN the magazine today. Come on, man. There's finally a little dissension. Finally a little dissension. I didn't, Dr. Maloney, we should have spent some time with you. I want you to say that Kelvin Benjamin was inbound. You've got to say it, Doc. Tell me he was inbound.
I plead the fifth.
Oh, gosh. Are there any honest Patriots fans anywhere?
No.
Oh, that hurts.
Dr. Maloney, thank you. We always appreciate your expertise. Thank you so much for taking the time for the program.
Anytime. Thanks, Evan. Have a great day.
Dr. Michael Maloney, sports medicine orthopedic surgeon at UR Medicine. Patriots fan, nobody is perfect. Scott Petoniak, the author of a number of books on the Buffalo Bills, including Buffalo Bills, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Always great having you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Evan.
Brian Parker, tight end. For the Denver Broncos, we're going to be rooting for you in the future, and thanks for coming in
Great.
And sharing your thoughts
Thank
as
you.
Well. And Jerry Doobie, go Bills. Whatever you're wearing, do that thing again, because we know that's what controls it.
Yep.
More connections coming up next.